हरि सहनावत सहनाभुनत् सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति 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 ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Bhishma, that foremost of smiters, after defeating those monarchs, set out with those damsels for Hastinapur.
You put those stickers in the back.
Can you hear? Whence the virtuous Kuru prince Vichitravirya ruled the earth like that best of monarchs, namely his father Santanu. O king, passing through many forests, rivers, hills, and woods, abounding with trees, he arrived at the capital in no time. Of immeasurable prowess in battle, the son of the ocean-going Ganga, having slain numerous foes in battle without a scratch on his own person, brought the daughters of the king of Kashi unto the Kurus as tenderly as if they were his daughters-in-law, or younger sisters or daughters. Bhishma of mighty arms, impelled by the desire of benefiting his brother, having by his prowess brought them thus, then offered those maidens possessing every accomplishment unto Vichitravirya. Conversant with the dictates of virtue, the son of Santanu, having achieved such an extraordinary feat according to kingly custom, then began to make preparations for his brother's wedding. When everything about the wedding had been settled by Bhishma in consultation with Satyavati, the eldest daughter of the king of Kashi, with a soft smile, told him these words: "At heart, I had chosen the king of Soba as my husband. He had, in his heart, accepted me for his wife. This was also approved of by my father. At the Swayamvara ceremony, also, I would have chosen him as my lord. Thou art conversant with all the dictates of virtue. Knowing all this, do as thou likest." Thus addressed by that maiden in the presence of the brahmanas, the heroic Bhishma began to reflect as to what should be done. As he was conversant with the rules of virtue, he consulted with the brahmanas who had mastered the Vedas, and permitted Amba, the eldest daughter of the ruler of Kashi, to do as she liked. But he bestowed with due rites the two other daughters, Ambika and Ambalika, on his younger brother Vichitravirya. Though Vichitravirya was virtuous and abstemious, yet proud of youth and beauty, he soon became lustful after his marriage. Both Ambika and Ambalika were of tall stature and of the complexion of molten gold. Their heads were covered with black curly hair, and their fingernails were high and red. Their hips were fat and round, and their breasts were full and deep. Endued with every auspicious mark, the amiable young ladies considered themselves to be wedded to a husband who was every way worthy of themselves, and extremely loved and respected Vichitravirya. Vichitravirya also, endued with the prowess of the celestials and the beauty of the twin Ashvinis, could steal the heart of any beautiful woman. The prince passed 7 years uninterruptedly in the company of his wives. He was attacked yet while in the prime of youth with FHTHISIS. It's tuberculosis, but this name I don't know. Friends and relatives in consultation with one another tried to effect a cure. But in spite of all efforts, the Kuru prince died, setting like the evening sun. The virtuous Bhishma then became plunged into anxiety and grief, and in consultation with Satyavati, caused this subsequent rites of the deceased to be performed by learned priests and the several of the Kuru race. So we see here that the Vedic culture, the concept that there will be mutual attraction between the boy and girl, that's fine. But we see here is that it's approved by everyone. Understand? If only attraction is all the consideration for a marriage, that's called a Gandharva rite. So the point is simply sense gratification. But when there's, the attraction is based on qualities, it's approved by the authorities that they feel it's a good, proper arrangement, then it has benefit. Does that make sense? So in other words, things should be done correctly, right? That's the point. Then we see that Amba had already given her heart to Shalya, and vice versa, he was attracted by her, and the father had approved. Unfortunately, up to this point, no one had said anything. That's why Shalya, after all the other kings were defeated, because they didn't have any particular attachment, he came forward afterwards and fought, right? Because he already wanted to marry Amba. So then now she's made the point, and they all understand this is good. You know, it's a proper arrangement, no problem. And so therefore then she sent him. Yes?
But she said that she had given her heart to the king of Shalya, and Shalya was the king of Madhya.
The Shalva?
Shalva was the king of
Shalva. Shalva. Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking, but back here it was saying Shalya, unless it's a miss... print. I always thought it was Shalva. But in here, it's saying Shalya. But we can check in another rendition and see if the printing is different. Because I always thought it was Salva. And Salva is the, he's one of the, you know, Shalya Dantavaki. So he was Hiranyakashipu. Right? So then for Bhishma to defeat him, he had to be pretty good, right? So point is that there. So then they thought, according to Dharma. So the point is that the if that proper attraction is there, that proper interaction is there, then there's going to be, you know, the family will go well. There will be proper children. You know, everything will go smoothly. So then they thought this will be a better arrangement, right? If it was only she was attracted, but not specifically. Then Shalva, then this wouldn't be as important. But because it was mutual, the father was agreeable, then it was very good. So then they said she could go, right? So then they made some arrangement. And then we see that Vichitravirya was very qualified, very attractive, but unfortunately proud of his youth and his beauty. And the girls are very qualified and very attractive. And, you know, we see here is what is the Vedic concept of attraction. It's not something very skinny. It's something that looks like a woman. Right? But unfortunately, then he spent 7 years basically with his wives exclusively instead of running the kingdom. And from that, then he became so weak that his lungs and stuff gave out. He got tuberculosis and died. Right? I think there's another case of this also. I can't remember the name. You know the name. Someone else also spent too much with the time with his wives and died of tuberculosis. Right? Too much means he wasn't performing his duties. So the times when he should have been doing his duties, you know, as a king, he was with his wives. So then that's too much.
What is Shantanu?
Shantanu? No. You have kings who spend, but not too much that they... die, but here, and he was strong and powerful, so it wasn't that he was a weakling or something like that. I think there was one empress in China then she had some man that she was very impressed with. And he died after 4 years. Like that, so. Therefore, one should not, means, in other words, there should be the proper balance of the performance of one's duties and then family interaction. And if you take family interaction as your duties, then many in the past have taken up this process and have not survived. Okay. Section. Any questions on this? Yes.
What was the arrangement made for Ambalika?
What was the arrangement made? Here we'll find later is they would have, you know, sent with you know, her with people to go see the king. You know what I'm saying? Means, as we can see, is that here was a battle situation. That you're on a chariot, you're having a fight with all the other kings, but Bhishma himself doesn't have a scratch, and he took care of these girls as if they were his own daughters or sisters and that. That means they didn't have a scratch either, and they weren't even uncomfortable during the fight. You know, it would be just some entertainment, you know, while sitting on the chariot. And so then they would have gotten back, taken care of everything. You can see here that Amba came, it said, with a soft smile. Right? That means everything's very nice, the arrangements are good, she's impressed by everyone, they fought, they killed hundreds, thousands of people for her benefit. So this is an impressive group of kings. You know, one could feel very confident, right? You know, as I heard one girl was saying, is that someone is saying is that, you know, you guys are, you know, your attachment, this and that, is too strong, right? And they said, yes, but have you ever had someone who's willing to kill for you? And the other person had to say no. So he says, that's why we're so attached. So here, the queens are so attached because here's someone who's willing to kill for them. They risked their own life to be killed. But it said he killed thousands of kings, not wimps, kings on chariots. That means they can fight with 1,000 or 10,000 or 60,000 other people. You know, so if we're talking about Shalya or Shalva, we're talking about Maharatis. He can fight with 60,000 other chariot warriors. And he killed thousands of those kind of people. So, impressive, you know, means these boys are like you, you know. So, all that's nicely arranged. And so, the arrangements are nice, it's all under Satyavati's guidance, so she's impressed with everything, but she's saying, my heart actually is with, you know, in other words, she's been taken, she's going along with it, but because everything's nice and they're dealing with them so nicely, she's not afraid to ask this point, right? She's not asking, you know, privately, she's asking Bhishma in front of the Brahmins. So she's putting it up as something that she's seriously thought about, and it's a consideration of religion. It's not just, you know, she's just feeling like that. But she's considered, you know, these people are qualified, they're doing everything right, and but at the same time, if I want to be true to my heart, my heart's actually given to this other king. Does that make sense? So then they would have also made proper arrangements for her to go. So it wouldn't have just been, okay, you like someone else, get out of here. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So everything will be taken care of. These are the things in between that we generally don't notice. Generally what we notice is the very, you know, the more passionate, you know, attraction and activities and the fighting and all that. But these gentle subtleties aren't caught, right? It didn't say the girls were scared in the fighting or had any inconvenience. No, everything went fine. If Bhishma didn't have a scratch and he's fighting, then the girls would have just been peacefully sitting there, you know, in the back of the chariot and just watching the fun. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Anything else? Section 103. Vaishampayana said, the unfortunate Satyavati then became plunged in grief on account of her son. Right now she's already lost both of her sons, right? Her father had said she can only become the queen if her son becomes the king. First one died, second one also died. First one was killed, second one died. So that means her son's gone. Her husband's already died. So now the throne is empty. So the fisherman's desire has now been thwarted, seemingly. The unfortunate Satyavati then became plunged in grief on account of her son. After performing with her daughters-in-law the funeral rites of the deceased, consoled as best she could, her weeping daughters-in-law and Bhishma, that foremost of all wielder of weapons, turning her eyes to religion and to the paternal and maternal lines of the Kurus, she addressed Bhishma and said, "The funeral cake, the achievements, and the perpetuation of the lines of the virtuous and celebrated Santanu of Kuru's race all now depend on thee. As the attainment of heaven is inseparable from good deeds, as long life is inseparable from truth and faith, so is virtue inseparable from thee." Right? Okay. "O virtuous one, thou art well acquainted in detail and in the abstract and in the dictates of virtue with various shrutis and with all the branches of the Vedas. Know very well that thou art equal unto Sukra and Angiras as regards firmness in virtue, knowledge of the particular customs of families, and readiness of inventions under difficulties." Right? So here he knows the Shastra, he knows what are the traditions followed by the great persons and by the families, and he knows how to apply the Shastra in time, place, and circumstance when things aren't going correctly, right? That means you know the Shastra, right? You've memorized it, nice. You know how to apply it, better. You know how to apply it according to the previous great personalities, better yet. You know also what are the customs and everything and how the usages are that are going on. That's then also adds to that. Then you know how to apply it when things aren't ideal. Then that's even more developed. Does that make sense? That means you know the scripture. Right? If you can only quote the scripture and say this is the way it is, but you don't know what's the tradition or how people applied it, it makes trouble. Right? Does that make sense? Just like once someone was telling me that one person was studying Ayurveda, and I was discussing with an actual Ayurvedic doctor about this person. And I said, "What do you think?" And they said, "It's nice. They know a lot, but they have one problem. They've only read the big books in Ayurveda. They haven't read the small ones." Right? So the big ones are the Shastra, but the small ones are written by the sages. So he says, therefore they don't really know how to apply it. Does that make sense? So that means knowing the Veda without knowing what the previous acharyas and the tradition is, and being able to apply it to any situation, you don't really know the Veda. Does that make sense? Yeah? So that's important. "Therefore, O foremost of virtuous men, relying on thee greatly, I shall appoint thee in a certain manner. Hearing me, it behooveth thee to do my bidding. O bull among men, my son and thy brother, endued with energy and dear unto thee, hath gone childless to heaven while still a boy. These wives of thy brother, the amiable daughters of the ruler of Kashi, possessing beauty and youth, have become desirous of children. Therefore, O thou of mighty arms, at my command, raise offspring on them for the perpetuation of our line. It behooveth thee to guard virtue against loss. Install thyself on the throne and rule the kingdom of the Bharatas. Wed thou duly a wife, plunge not thy ancestors into hell." Right, so now she's asking him, unfortunately, to do everything that he made vows that he wouldn't do. He wouldn't sit on the throne, he wouldn't get married like that, and he wouldn't have any children. So here she wants to appoint. Appoint means that the rule of Niyoga, which can be used in the Satta Dwarpa and Treta Yugas, is where the husband is not able to beget children on his wife, therefore his brother or qualified Brahman can do that for him, right? Does that make sense? So that's what's asking. Though traditionally it would be done while the brother is alive. Generally widows, it's not done for. Right? Some do it, but the Manu does not really approve of it. Does that make sense? It's not considered proper. But what to do? Here they're looking at that there's no one, therefore it's an emergency. Right? If it wasn't an emergency, then it wouldn't be a consideration. Does that make sense? So she's saying is that even though he's following Dharma, all these things, that sometimes then things need to be adjusted, even the strict rules. Does that make sense? Vaishampayana continued, thus addressed by his mother and friends and relatives, that oppressor of foes, the virtuous Bhishma, gave this reply conformable with the dictates of virtue. O mother, what thou sayest is certainly sanctioned by virtue, but thou knowest what my vow is in the matter of begetting children. Thou knowest also that what all that transpired in connection with thy dower. That he's saying is that means all what you've said is in correct connection with virtue. So even though niyoga is not a great thing to use, even though widows shouldn't use the niyoga, but it's all in accordance with virtue because of the circumstance. Right? But he's saying that but the point is I have my vows, and those vows are in accordance with your being given to Santanu. Right? If there were some other vows, it's another thing, but they're in connection with her. Right? So it's kind of like he can't do that. Right? O Satyavati, I repeat the pledge I once gave, namely, I would renounce the three worlds, the empire of heaven, anything that may be greater than that, but truth I would never renounce. The earth may renounce its scent, water may renounce its moisture, light may renounce its attribute of exhibiting forms, air may renounce its attribute of touch, the sun may renounce its glory, fire, its heat, the moon its cooling rays, space its capacity of generating sound, the slayer of Vritta his prowess. Who's the slayer of Vritta? Shiva. Sure? Indra. Okay? Right? So, is it possible the earth will renounce its scent and all these things? Yes? Yes or no? Possible? Maybe?
During dissolution.
Huh?
During dissolution.
During dissolution. Okay, yeah, during dissolution. Okay, so this is the one option.
There's actually a shloka like that also says that in Chanakaniti, that maybe the ocean will come out of its boundaries, you know, but the sentient persons will never go out of their boundaries.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter, maybe during the time of dissolution everything goes upside down, not the same purpose.
Okay, so in other words, this saying is something that's impossible. That may happen, but this won't. Right? You hear the kings use this many, many times. The God of justice is impartiality, but I cannot renounce truth. Thus addressed by her son, endued with wealth of energy, Satyavati said unto Bhishma, O thou whose prowess is truth, I know of thy firmness in truth. Thou canst, if so minded, create by the help of thy energy three worlds other than those that exist. I know that thy vow was on my account, but considering this emergency, bear thou the burden of the duty that one owes to his ancestors. O punisher of foes, act in such a way that the linear link may not be broken, and our friends and relatives may not grieve. Thus urged by the miserable and weeping Satyavati, speaking such words inconsistent with virtue from grief at the loss of her son, Bhishma addressed her again and said, O queen, turn not thy eyes away from virtue. O destroy us not. Right? Remember before he said what she was saying was correct. Now he's saying it's not. So she just said it. And so he says, she gave example. He said, yes, what you're saying is correct, but it doesn't apply to me. Then when he said why he's not doing these things, then she again asked him, then he's saying, this is a breach of virtue. You understand? Okay. Breach of truth by a Kshatriya is never applauded in our treatises on religion. I shall soon tell thee, O Queen, what the established Kshatriya usage is, to which recourse may be had to prevent Santanu's line becoming extinct on earth. Hearing me, reflect on what should be done in consultation with learned priests and those who are acquainted with practices allowable in times of emergency and distress, forgetting not at the same tune what the ordinary course of social conduct is. Section 104. Bhishma continued, in olden days Rama, the son of Janmadagni, in anger at the death of his father, slew with his battle axe the king of the Haihayas. And Rama, by cutting off the 1,000 arms of Arjuna, the Haihaya king, achieved a most difficult feat in the world. Not content with this, he set out on his chariot for the conquest of the world. And taking up his bow, he cast around his mighty weapons to exterminate the Kshatriyas. The illustrious Skayan of Bhrigu's race, by means of his swift arrows, annihilated the Kshatriya's tribe 21 times. That means 1 in 20. So he killed this generation. The next generation that came up, when they came of age, he killed them also. So he did this 21 generations. Right? Say again?
He lived really long.
Yeah, he lived really long. But the Kshatriyas, they didn't. They were... didn't make it. When the earth was thus deprived of Kshatriyas by the great Rishi, the Kshatriya ladies all over the land had offspring raised by Brahmanas skilled in the Vedas. It has been said in the Vedas that the son so raised belongeth to him that had married the mother. You understand? Means who married the, I mean, in other words, whose wife. Means, yeah, whose wife the girl is, that's whose son her offspring is. Does that make sense? A girl is married to a boy. It doesn't matter who she has offspring from. The offspring is her husband's. Right? Alive or dead. Right? So here, their husbands were dead, but they had offspring. So their offspring belonged to their husbands. Yes. Say again? For Karna also works. Yes, means Karna technically is Pandu's son. But because it's not known, he's raised by Radha, right? And his wife. So therefore, they're also his parents, right? So you can say he's their son. But because only they knew and Kunti didn't recognize that, means when he first came into the assembly, and that she recognized him. So if she had said, this is my son, there would have been no fight. He would have been crowned as the king. And so with the support of his other 6 brothers, Duryodhana and his friends would have had to go to the forest, right? Because then that means, then you have Karna and Arjuna on one side, right? Yeah. But that didn't happen. She didn't say anything. Right? Out of embarrassment. Because generally, niyoga happens after you're married. This had happened before. Right? So that's not considered so good. Right? The Kshatriya ladies went in unto the Brahmins, not lustfully, but from motives of virtue. Indeed, it was thus that the Kshatriya race was revived. So here we see it is used in emergency because there is no brothers in that. All the Kshatriyas are killed, that even a widow then would use the niyoga. But otherwise, it wouldn't be used. Because if brothers are there, they have the kids. You know what I'm saying? Means if she had said, okay, you get married, you have the kids, forget about the Chittavirya's wives, it would have been less of a thing. But he's not getting married, therefore. Does that make sense? In this connection, there is another old story that I would recite to you. There was in olden days a wise rishi of the name of Utatya. He had a wife of the name Mamata, whom he dearly loved. One day, Utatya's younger brother, Brihaspati, the priest of the celestials, endued with great energy, approached Mamata. The latter, however, told her husband's younger brother, that foremost of eloquent men, that she had conceived from her connection with his eldest brother, and that, therefore, he should not then seek for the consummation of his wishes. She continued, O illustrious Brihaspati, the child that I have conceived has studied in his mother's womb the Vedas with the six Angas, right? While he's in the womb, he's already studied the Vedas, right? Right? So it's never too early to start your studies, right? That's why it's said that Prabhupada mentions the child becomes conscious at the 7 months, and the mother should therefore read Bhagavatam to the child, so then he'll have already heard all these things and be, right? Like Astavakra, he had heard, because his mother would always sit in for the class of her husband. So Astavakra's son already knew the Vedas before he was born, and even while he's in the womb, then he made some comments, right, which got him into trouble. That's why he became Astavakra, right? Because he was cursed to be bent in 8 places for making these comments. How can this womb of mine afford room for 2 children at a time? Therefore it behoveth thee not to seek for the consummation of thy desire at such a time. Thus addressed by her, Brihaspati, though possessed of great wisdom, succeeded not in suppressing his desire. Right, so the point is, when a woman's pregnant, then you don't try for a second pregnancy. Right? The child in the womb then addressed him and said, O father, cease from thy attempt. There is no space here for 2. O illustrious one, the room is small. I have occupied it first. It behooveth thee not to afflict me. But Brihaspati, without listening to what the child in the womb said, sought the embraces of Mamata, possessing the most beautiful pair of eyes. The illustrious Brihaspati, beholding this, became indignant and reproached Utatya's child, and cursed him, saying, Because thou hast spoken to me in the way thou hast at the time of pleasure that is sought after by all creatures, perpetual darkness shall overtake thee. From this curse of the illustrious Brihaspati, Utatya's child, who was equal unto Brihaspati in energy, was born blind and came to be called Dirga Thomas, enveloped in perpetual darkness. The wise Dirga Thomas, possessed of a knowledge of the Vedas, though born blind, succeeded yet by virtue of his learning in obtaining for a wife a young and handsome Brahmin maiden of the name of Pradveshi. Having married her, the illustrious Dirga Thomas, for the expansion of Utatya's race, begat upon her several children with Gotama as their eldest. These children, however, were all given to covetousness and folly. The virtuous and illustrious Dirga Thomas, possessing complete mastery over the Vedas, soon after learnt from Surabhi's son the practices of their order, and fearlessly betook himself to those practices. Regarding them with reverence, for shame is the creature of sin and can never be where there is purity of intention. Then those best of munis that dwelt in the same asylum, beholding him transgress the limits of propriety, became indignant seeing sin where sin was not. They said, Oh, this man transgresseth the limit of propriety. No longer doth he deserve a place among us. Therefore we shall cast the sinful wretch off. They said many other things regarding the Muni Dirga Thomas. His wife too, having obtained children, became indignant with him. Right, so then he's knows his practices. And then he's learned other also rules and rituals. So it's from a different line. So then his sons, not really understanding what's happening, they get upset why he's practicing the rituals from another line. So they say he's worthy of being given up. Right? Because there is a rule that if you're in one line, you don't give it up for another. But there's also the element that you can add lines if... You know, like you know one Veda, then you know the next Veda, then you know the next Veda. But they were taking it from the principle within one Veda, you drop one line and for another. right? And so because of their folly, then they're saying that their father is bogus, right? And the wife had, because she has children, now what do you need the husband for? She got the kids. So she also is going along with it. The husband then addressing his wife, Pradveshi, said, "Why is that thou hast been dissatisfied with me?" His wife answered, "The husband is called the Bhartri, because he supporteth the wife. He is called Pati, because he protecteth her. But thou art neither to me. O thou of great ascetic merit, on the other hand, thou hast been blind from birth. It is I who have to support thee and thy children. I shall not do so in the future." Right? Hearing these words of his wife, the Rishi became indignant and said unto her and her children, "Take me unto the Kshatriyas, and thou shalt then be rich." His wife replied by saying, "I desireth not wealth that may be procured by thee, for that can never bring me happiness." Right? It means Brahmins don't go to Kshatriyas for wealth, right? Because a Kshatriya's wealth carries 1/6 of the sin of the kingdom. Right, so therefore, unless it's an emergency, they won't beg from kings. So if you hear of Brahmins begging from kings, that means it's an emergency. So that's why he said, okay, if it's such a thing, then take me to a king and I'll beg from him. But now she's saying, I'm not interested in wealth that comes from you. Right, because she's not interested in him. Oh, best of Brahmanas, do as thou likest. I shall not be able to maintain thee as before. At these words of his wife, Dirghatama said, "I lay down from this day as a rule that every woman shall have to adhere to one husband for her life, be the husband dead or alive. It shall not be lawful for a woman to have connection with another. She who may have such connection shall certainly be regarded as fallen. A woman without husband shall always be liable to be sinful. And even if she be wealthy, she shall not be able to enjoy that wealth truly. Calamity and evil report shall ever dog her." Hearing these words of her husband, Pradveshi became very angry, and commanding her son said, "Throw him in the waters of Ganga." At the command of their mother, the wicked Gotam and his brothers, those slaves of covetousness and folly, exclaiming, "Indeed, why should we support this old man?" tied the Muni to a raft, and committing him to the mercy of the stream, returned home without compunction. Right? So then up to this point, means this would be way back in history, right? That the women didn't need to stay with one man. Right? Means if their husband died, they could marry someone else, it wouldn't matter. Or they could be with one man, and at some point, if it didn't like, they could go marry another. Or, you know, just by, you know, generally they would stay together, but if not, they could move on with someone else. It wasn't a fixed rule. Right? As we see is that the child in the womb mentioned to Brihaspati, he called him father. Right? Does that make sense? So it didn't at those days it didn't matter because people were very dutiful and whoever they were with they'd be committed to. Does that make sense? So the women were chaste, but it meant they were chaste to whoever man they were with. Does that make sense? But then with this, Dirghatama then said, no, the woman has to stay with one man. Right? So not being pleased with this, they decided to put him on a raft in the river, float him down the river. The blind old man drifting along the stream on that raft passed through the territories of many kings. One day, a king named Vali, conversant with every duty, went to the Ganges to perform his ablutions. As the monarch was thus engaged, the raft to which the Rishi was tied approached him. As it came, the king took the old man. The virtuous Vali, ever devoted to truth, then learning who the man was, that was saved by him, chose him for raising up offspring. Right? Vali said, "O illustrious one, it behooveth thee to raise upon my wife a few sons that shall be virtuous and wise." Thus addressed, the Rishi, endued with great energy, expressed his willingness. Thereupon King Vali sent his wife Sudeshna unto him. But the queen, knowing that the latter was blind and old, went not unto him. she sent unto him her nurse. And upon that Shudra woman, the virtuous Rishi of passions under full control, begat 11 children, of whom Kshivat was the eldest. Beholding those 11 sons with Kshivat as the eldest, who had studied all the Vedas, and who, like Rishis, were utterers of Brahma, and were possessed of great power, King Vali one day asked the Rishi, saying, "Are these children mine?" The Rishi replied, "No, they are mine. Kshivat and others have been begotten by me upon a Shudra woman. Thy unfortunate queen, Sudeshna, seeing me blind and old, insulted me by not coming herself, but sending unto me instead her nurse." The king then pacified that best of Rishis and sent unto him his queen Sudeshna. The Rishi, by merely touching her person, said to her, "Thou shalt have 5 children named Anga, Vanga, Kalinga, Pundra, and Sumna, who shall be like unto Surya, son, unto Surya himself in glory, and after their names as many countries shall be known on earth. It is after their names that their dominions have come to be known, Anga, Vanga, Kalinga, Pundra, and Sumna." Anga is in south, Vanga is Bengal. That's this side. Kalinga, I'm not sure where that is. Yeah, yeah, that's there. You know where it is?
Karna,
yeah. I think that's a little bit... It's in south, yeah. Ashok went to just before south.
So it's before Madhura Sangha.
So it's what, like Karnataka or Maharashtra or that kind of area. Okay. It was thus that the line of Vali was perpetuated in days of old by a great Rishi. See that? Yeah. It was thus also that many great bowmen and great chariot car warriors wedded to virtue sprung in the Kshatriya waste from the seed of Brahmins. Hearing this, O mother, do as thou likest as regards the matter in hand. Right. So his point was, is you're saying that Niyoga should be performed by the brother, which would traditionally be done. But he's pointing out here is that Brahmins also would be used. Right. Virtuous Brahmins. Then in here we see also that Dirga Thomas, that because it wasn't the queen, then technically you could say that the children, because it was the nurse was not a maidservant, so they're not technically connected to the king. Does that make sense? So the queen and her maidservants would be connected to the king, so then their children would be the king's. But the nurse is not. So therefore, when he asked, "Are these children mine?" because they were all great Brahmins, and he's thinking, "How would these be my kids?" Right? So then Dirga Thomas said, "They're not, they're mine." Because your wife cheated me. Right? So then, after that, then he arranged, his wife went, then they got Kshatriya children. Right? Does that make sense? Does that make sense then here also? You see, Kshatriya is a little bit more bodily conscious. Right? So therefore, because of that passions, then they get a slightly lower result. Right? But the Brahmins then, senses are controlled, or then out of respectfulness we see the nurse here, or the maidservant Ambalika, right? Because of their respect for the Brahminical order, therefore they give birth to great children. Does that make sense? Yes.
How is it that it's trivial that it is problematic?
Who? How the previous ones are problematic? The sons take after the quality of the mother. So it could be that because the mother was kind of had an attitude, therefore, because it didn't say she had respect for him and that, it just, he was qualified and this and that, he attained the girl. But it wasn't like it said with Vichitravirya that they considered him equal unto them and a proper husband, you know, they respected him, they had great affection for him, like that. It didn't mention that. like that, because it's not necessary. That's not the point here. The point here is niyoga, is if the brother's not available, then the Brahmins can be used. So it was the Kshatriyas, all the Kshatriya, you know, queens of India used Brahmins, and then here also, in case you're thinking, oh, well, that's okay, used by them, but what about something more specific than Durga Thomas, who is, you know, is Utatya Brihaspati's his brother, right? So they're great personalities like that. So then you can see is, okay, you know, it looks bona fide. It's not a one-off thing like that. Section 105. Bhishma continued, listen, O mother, to me as I indicate the means by which the Bharat line may be perpetuated. Let an accomplished Brahmin be invited by an offer of wealth, and let him raise offspring upon the wives of Ichitravirya. Vaishapaina continued, Satyavati, then smiling softly, and in a voice broken in bashfulness, right? So when they smile softly, it's something very, very, how do you say, close to the heart that's going to be spoken, right? Does that make sense? So whenever a woman speaks in that way, it must be taken seriously. It can't be taken lightly. Does that make sense? Yeah? O Bharata of mighty arms, what thou sayest is true. For my confidence in thee, I shall now indicate the means of perpetuating our line. Thou shalt not be able to reject it, being conversant as thou art with the practices permitted in seasons of distress. Right, seasons of distress. So the meaning here is that you have the normal time and you have time of distress. The seasons of distress meaning there may be various like seasons or different times. So there's different kinds of distress, so there's different seasons that are there of distress. In our race thou art virtue, and thou art truth, and thou art too our sole refuge. Therefore, hearing what I say truly, do what may be proper. My father was a virtuous man. For virtue's sake, he had kept a ferry. One day, in the prime of my youth, I went to ply that boat. It so happened that the great and wise Rishi Parasara, that foremost of all virtuous men, came and betook himself to my boat for crossing the Jamuna. As I was rowing him, so for virtue, that means they were plying people across the river for free. Right? You ply people across the river and take money, there's no virtue. That's called business. But you're doing it as a charity, then you get virtue. So he was having if it was the son does it for money. Right? The daughter's doing it, she does it for virtue. Right? Does that make sense? Because a girl, if she has virtue, she will get money, she will get everything. Right? Does that make sense? A daughter of a fisherman, she becomes the empress of the world. That's from virtue. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, daughters should always be engaged in nice religious activities. Right? Not spoiled in sense gratification. Right? They should be taken care of very well, have all facilities, not lacking in anything, but they should always be engaged in religious acts. Therefore, then their prosperity will continue. Does that make sense? Yeah? As I was rowing Parasara across the river, the Rishi became excited with desire and began to address me in soft words. The fear of my father was uppermost in my mind, but the terror of the Rishi's curse at last prevailed. Right? So she's thinking, if my father finds out, I'm in trouble, but if the Rishi gets upset, then he may turn me into a frog or something, right? Having obtained from him a precious boon, I could not refuse his solicitations. The Rishi, by his energy, brought me under his complete control and gratified his desire then and there, having first enveloped the regions in a thick fog. Before this, there was a revolting fishy odor in my body, right? Because she was born from a fish, right? Her and her brother Matsya were born from a fish, right? So having been born from a fish, then naturally they smell like fish, right? So Matsya became the commander-in-chief of what's his name? Upparichara Vasu's army. and Matsya are known as Matsya Gandha, right? Satyavati, she became then the daughter of the fisherman. But the Rishi dispelled it and gave me my present fragrance. The Rishi also told me by bringing forth the child in an island of the river, I would still continue to be a virgin. Right? The child of Parasara, so born to me, in my maidenhood hath become a great Rishi, endued with great ascetic powers, and known by the name of Dwaipayana, the island born, right? Because he made an island out in the middle of the river. That illustrious Rishi, having by his ascetic power divided the Vedas into four parts, hath come to be called on earth by the name of Vyas, the divider or arranger. And for his dark color, Krishna. So this is Krishna Dwaipayana Vyas, right? Truthful in speech, free from passion, a mighty ascetic who hath burnt all his sins. He went away with his father immediately after his birth. Appointed by me and thee also, that Rishi of incomparable splendor will certainly beget good children upon the wives of thy brother. He told me when he went away, Mother, think of me when thou art in difficulty. I will now call him up, if thou, O Bhishma of mighty arbs, so desireth. If thou art willing, O Bhishma, I am sure that great ascetic will beget children upon Vichitravirya's field. Right? Right? Field means, because you have a field, you grow something in the field, so seed is planted in the field, then you get some result. You get a crop, right? Does that make sense? So the wife is called the field. Does that make sense? Vaishampayana continued. Oh, I wondered why it used to be. I always thought it was easy to hear, and I wondered why this time it's not. Vaishampayana continued, mention being made of the great Rishi. Bhishma, with joined palms, said, that man is truly intelligent who fixes his eyes judiciously on virtue, profit, and pleasure, and who, after reflecting with patience, acteth in such a way that virtue may lead to future virtue, profit to future profit, and pleasure to future pleasure. Right? In other words, doing something that seemingly is practical, but it doesn't lead to furtherance of the same thing in the future, is not actually very practical. Right? Does that make sense? I have money, I deal with money in such a way that it doesn't lead to more money, then that's not good. Right? Or virtue to more virtue, sense gratification to more sense gratification. You understand? Therefore, what hath been said by thee, and which, besides being beneficial to us, is consistent with virtue, is certainly the best advice and hath my full approval. When Bhishma had said this, O thou of Kuru's race, Kali, Satyavati, thought of the Muni Dwaipayana, and Dwaipayana, who was then engaged in interpreting the Vedas, learning that he was being called up by his mother, came instantly unto her without anybody's knowing it. Satyavati then duly greeted her son and embraced him with arms, bathed him in her tears. For the daughter of the fisherman wept bitterly at the sight of her son after so long a time. Her first son, the great Rishi Vyas, beholding her weeping, washed her with cool water, and bowing unto her said, I have come, O mother, to fulfill thy wishes. Therefore, O virtuous one, command me without delay. I shall accomplish thy desire. The family priest of the Bharatas then worshipped the great Rishi, duly, and the latter accepted the offerings of worship, uttering the usual mantras. Gratified with the worship he received, he took his seat. Satyavati, beholding him seated at his ease, after all usual inquiries, addressed him and said, O learned one, so notice that he has been received, they've had their interactions, he's being sat, he's comfortable. Then you get down to business, right? You don't, right in the middle when someone's on the way to the bathroom or just finished something, or right in the middle of eating, start to do business, right? Does that make sense? even though it's very important and it's very pressing on your mind, you know, you wait until the portion is comfortable and everything's fine. Then you do that. Does that make sense? Okay. She said, O learned one, sons derive their birth both from the father and the mother. They are therefore the common property of both parents. There cannot be the least doubt about it that the mother hath such much power over them as the father. As thou art indeed my eldest son according to the ordinance, O Brahmarshi, so is Vichitravirya my youngest son. As Bhishma is Chitravirya's brother on the father's side, so thou art his brothers on the same mother's side. I do not know what you may think, but this is what, O son, I think. This Bhishma, the son of Santanu, devoted to truth, doth not, for the sake of truth, entertain the desire of either begetting children or ruling the kingdom. Therefore, from affection for thy brother, Vichitravirya, for the perpetuation of our dynasty, for the sake of this Bhishma's request and my command, for kindness to all creatures, for the protection of the people, and from the liberality of thy heart. O sinless one, it behooveth thee to do what I say. Thy younger brother hath left two widows, like unto the daughters of the celestials themselves, endued with youth and beauty. For the sake of virtue and religion, they become desirous of offspring. Thou art the fittest person to be appointed. Therefore, beget upon them children worthy of our race, and for the continuance of our line. Right? So both he's a brother, right? And he's a Brahmin. Right, so therefore, Vyas, hearing this, said, O Satyavati, I think the principle is that a widow will not have children through niyoga simply because she wants children or out of desire. Right? She doesn't get remarried or that because of that. But in this case, continuance of the line, then there's a need, then it has a purpose. Right? Vyas, upon hearing this, said, O Satyavati, thou knowest what virtue is both in respect of this life and the other. O thou of great wisdom, thy affections also are set on virtue. Therefore, at thy command, making virtue my motive, I shall do what thou desirest. Indeed, this practice that is conformable to the true and eternal religion is known to me. I shall give unto my brother children that shall be like unto Mitra and Varuna. Let the ladies then duly observe for one full year the vow I indicate. They shall then be purified. No woman shall ever approach me without having observed a rigid vow. Satyavati then said, O sinless one, it must be as thou sayest. Take such steps that the ladies may conceive immediately. In a kingdom where there is no king, the people perish from want of protection. Sacrifices and other holy acts are suspended. The clouds send no showers and the gods disappear. How can a kingdom be protected that hath no king? Therefore, see thou that the ladies conceive. Bhishma will watch over the children as long as they are in their mother's wombs. Vyasa replied, If I am to give unto my brother children so unseasonably, then let the ladies bear my ugliness. That in itself shall, in their case, be the austerest of penances. If the princesses of Kaushalya can bear my strong odor, my ugly and grim visage, my attire and body, she shall then conceive an excellent child. Vaishampayana continued, having spoken thus unto Satyavati, Vyasa of great energy addressed her and said, Let the princesses of Kaushalya, clad in clean attire and decked with ornaments, wait for me in her bedchamber. Saying this, the rishi disappeared. Satyavati then went to her daughter-in-law, and seeing her in private, spoke to her these words of beneficial and virtuous import. O princess of Kaushala, listen to what I say. It is consistent with virtue. The dynasty of the Bharatas hath been extinct from my misfortune. Beholding my affliction and the extinction of his paternal line, the wise Bhishma, impelled also by the desire of perpetuating a race, hath made me a suggestion. Which suggestion, however, for its accomplishment is dependent on thee. Accomplish it, O daughter, and restore the lost line of the Bharatas. O thou of fair hips, bring forth a child equal in splendor under the chief of the celestials. He shall bear the onerous burden of our hereditary kingdom. Satyavati having succeeded with great difficulty in procuring the assent of her virtuous daughter-in-law to a proposal which was not inconsistent with virtue, then fed brahmanas and rishis and numerous guests who arrived on the occasion. Right. So, well, and here what we see is that he said it should be a year they should do austerities. Then having done that, then we can see from this by inference that he was indicating that he would appear to them in a very nice form. Right? Because they've done their austerities, then he will appear to them as a nice, you know, well-dressed Brahmin, and then conceive children. But Satyavati, being impatient, then she's worried that there's no king, then there'll be a problem. Then she said, no, she should conceive children immediately. So he said, okay, then as I am, because in my, I do austerities, I'm not, you know, necessarily taking a bath or combing my hair or doing any of these things. So as I am, all dirty and funky and smelly and ugly like that, then if they can tolerate that, and we do see we're dealing with princesses here, right? They go very much on good looks. So then that will be their austerity. So if they can handle that, then they'll have good children. They can't handle that, problem. Right? Yeah. So then on Thursday, we will find out if things work or there's a problem.
Also, I do think that Satyavati was a mother. So for mother, the child, doesn't matter how does it look, it's still okay.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
For the wife, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.